As always, it's a Tuesday afternoon. We enjoy having our weekly chat with Dr. Ross Walker. I wanted to talk to you, Ross. You've got a couple of articles here that we're going to touch on, time permitting as to how many we get to. But we were talking about pollution, right, as in smoking pollution for your lungs. Let's talk about air pollution. And you say air pollution. Is it our biggest killer?
No, our biggest killer is coronary artery disease or heart disease, keeps me in a job. That kills about 17 million people around the world every year. But it's been estimated that air pollution kills pretty close to 9 million people around the year around the world every year. Now, you'd say to yourself, well, air pollution knocks off the lungs. That's the big issue. No. Air pollution actually increases your risk for cardiovascular disease. So of the 17 million people, quite a few of those have a strong contribution, much higher rate of heart attack and stroke in people who are exposed, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, are higher in people with high exposure to air pollution. Chronic lung disease, logically, you're breathing in crappy air, so it's going to cause a problem. The brains are not spared from air pollution, so exposure to air pollution as a one-year-old is linked to significant bad brain changes at age 12. There's an association with many mental health disorders, bipolar, depression, teenage psychoses, autism, all linked to excessive air pollution when you're younger. And there was a study of 1,000 women in Australia from age 73 to 87, 40% increased risk for Alzheimer's disease with the highest levels of air pollution. Another study out of India showing a link between air pollution, osteoporosis, can affect the unborn child with high rates of congenital abnormalities, preterm births. And the one I found quite odd is a link between hair loss and air pollution as well. So the bottom line here is air pollution ain't good for you.
So you've got to make sure that you try to have the best environment to live in. What about mold? We're sort of coming out, I suppose, of the winter season, but what about living in an environment where there's mold? You might work in an environment where there's mold.
Yeah, well, look, a lot of doctors say, it doesn't do much, don't worry about it, just keep your house as tidy as possible. But I've got a number of patients who've lived in mouldy environments and get all sorts of health issues, not just breathing issues. You can get fungal infections in the lungs from mould, but other people can get heightened allergic responses. There's people who are just very, very sensitive to a whole variety of chemicals. So, no, I don't think mould's good for you at all, and it's certainly bad for asthmatics.
The next one I wanted to touch on was food interactions and food-drug interactions, right? So I know from having a dad who sadly is no longer with us, but dad was on warfarin, and I know that there were quite a few foods that dad couldn't eat with warfarin. That's a good example of a food-drug interaction?
Warfarin's probably the standard we talk about when you talk about food and drugs. So if anyone is on warfarin, and these days we now have stronger blood thinners that you don't need the blood tests and you don't need to be that paranoid about what you eat and what you drink. But if you still have something like a prosthetic heart valve, these stronger blood thinners, these newer ones, don't work in that situation. So you still need to be on warfarin.
Right.
So I used to have buckets of people on warfarin. Now I've only got a handful. And so if you are on warfarin, you've got to be careful about what you eat, so especially leafy green vegetables. So there's this misconception that if you're on warfarin, you can't have leafy green vegetables. You can, but you've got to have the same dose every day and adjust your INR levels, which is the blood test, to see what your warfarin's doing around how much leafy green vegetables you have. If you're on any blood thinners, you've got to be careful about painkillers, because a lot of these painkillers, the non-steroidal drugs like Celebrex, not so much Celebrex, but Mobic and Voltaren and Nurofen, Brufen, all those drugs, can irritate the lining of your stomach and increase your risk for bleeding. With warfarin, alcohol can have an effect. Some vitamins can have an effect. Another one that I spoke about in the article I sent to you that I wrote is that calcium-rich foods, things like milk and yogurt and those sort of things, can actually reduce the absorption of antibiotics. So if you're on a course of antibiotics and you swallow them down with milk,
yes,
it actually mightn't work as well.
Right.
And then the obvious one there as well is alcohol. Alcohol and any prescription medicines, you've got to be very careful, but especially things like sedatives, painkillers and stimulants. And then finally, this is a big one. Many people, and I'm not one of them, enjoy grapefruit juice. Now, when you've hit 60, most people are on some medication for something, and basically what grapefruit juice does is block the major enzyme that metabolizes drugs. So I tell the joke of the little boy says to his mother, "When I grow up, Mum, I want to be a rock musician." His mother replies, "I'm sorry, but you have to choose one or the other." And I think it's the same thing with grapefruit juice. If you're on grapefruit juice and medications, you've got to choose one or the other. So I'd give up the grapefruit juice.
Is it the same with any other citrus juice, as in orange juice?
No, it doesn't have the same effect. It just doesn't do the same thing. So the bergamot that I talk about all the time that I have the association with, that also comes from citrus fruits, but there's no interactions between that and any drugs. And also, I should mention, there is some comments about bananas being very high in potassium, which they are, and some blood pressure treatments, such as the ACE inhibitors, Coversil, Tritase, those sort of drugs, or the ARBs, Micardis, Atacand, those sort of drugs, they can also slightly put up your potassium. But as long as you're not having four or five bananas a day, I don't think it's a major issue. But anyone who is on a blood pressure pill, especially as you get older, should have your electrolytes checked, the potassium levels checked, the sodium, the kidney function checked. And if your potassium's all right, I wouldn't worry too much about that. But again, if your potassium's in the upper range of normal and you're taking these drugs and you also throw bananas on top of that, that may cause an issue.
What's your advice to people that may be taking medications, antibiotics, for example, a course of antibiotics, and the food interactions? What's your advice about?
My strong advice is it's best to take them either an hour before you eat or a couple of hours after you've eaten so that you can minimise the potential interactions and also maximise the effect of the antibiotics. Because, and also, with that, as far as antibiotics go as well, I don't think we should be willy-nilly taking antibiotics. I think these days, with all of the comments we're making about antibiotic resistance, with all these dreadful resistant bugs, that your doctor should almost prove that you've got a bacterial infection before they give you an antibiotic. So when you and I were kids, Brent, we'd have a bit of a runny nose, going to the doctor, we put on an antibiotic, and that's just absolute nonsense. And also, in that situation, the antibiotics makes the situation worse because it's wiping out all your normal gut bacteria so you don't fight the viruses as well, because antibiotics do nothing at all to viruses. So you only use an antibiotic if you have a bacterial infection, such as a urinary tract infection, a streptococcal sore throat, coughing a whole lot of muck where they've proven that there's a bug in there, or the serious ones like septicemia or bacterial meningitis.
Why does a UTI create in older people delirium?
Because when the breakdown products of the bacteria spill into the bloodstream, those toxins can then get into the brain and just cloud the thinking. So that's why it happens. So any infection, any electrolyte problem, or, for example, fluctuations in the sugar, you drop someone's sugar level, that can induce a delirium state in people. Low sodiums can do it. So if you, and I'm not talking about people who are low on salt, I'm people who are diluting their blood with, say, too much water. There's a condition called syndrome of inappropriate ADH where the sodium drops. Those people can also go delirious as well.
Our time is up as always. It goes so quick when we have a chat with Dr. Ross Walker. Mate, have a great week in Noosa, you lucky person.
No,
Byron.
Noosa,
in Byron.
Not together, Queensland yet.
In Byron. Byron, okay. Yep. So have a lovely week in,
thanks,
in Byron with your wife, and we'll catch up with you the week after next, all right?
Look forward to it.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye, Ross. Yeah.